Welcome to Listen to Lawrence, presented by Lawrence Eric Davidow, Senior and Managing Partner of Davidow, Davidow, Siegel & Stern, one of the first and most successful elder law, special needs, and estate planning firms on Long Island. This podcast series is based on his Listen to Lawrence seminars and will teach you how to plan in advance to protect your own assets and those that you leave to your children and grandchildren. Mr. Davidow is a past president of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys, a published author, and an accomplished and educational speaker. So sit back and listen to Lawrence.
Hello, everybody. My name is Lawrence Davidow, and this is another episode of our Listen to Lawrence podcast dedicated to answering your questions. Well, we have a question today, and it basically comes down to this. Hey, Lawrence. I got on Medicaid. Thank you. You helped me do that. You helped me do the whole Medicaid application. And thank God we got the Medicaid. Are we done? Is there anything else we need to do thereafter or anything annually? What's next? Well, today I have our usual special guest, who is Michelle Jablonski, who is a partner in our firm and heads up our Medicaid department. And since she's the guru on this stuff, I thought I would bring her in here and let her answer this question. So, Michelle, is there anything else that these clients have to do after they're on Medicaid?
It's an interesting question.
Isn't it?
It is. Because the last 3 years, as the world has been atypical, Medicaid has been atypical.
So COVID screwed everything up.
COVID changed things.
Okay.
So before COVID, it was customary that after you filed a Medicaid application, a year later, if you still wanted to retain your Medicaid benefits, you would have to file a recertification.
What if you ignore that?
Because
there's a lot of paperwork. It comes in the mail. It's very complicated. What if they just ignored that?
If you ignore that, you will become discontinued from Medicaid,
and you will receive a—it is bad, okay, right?
You've gone through all this work to get it, and now you're just letting it lapse.
All right, so there's paperwork.
There is paperwork. But before COVID, everyone would get that paperwork on an annual basis, and they asked you certain questions. Most of them are based on your updated income or assets, which I'll get to a little bit later.
Was this a first of the year kind of thing or an anniversary date from when you got Medicaid?
It was typically the anniversary of when you got Medicaid. So we would instruct clients, oh, you were approved for Medicaid in October. Next September, look out for the paperwork about the recertification. Now, if the client was institutionalized or in a facility type setting, the facility, in addition to the client or their representative, would have received the request for recertification paperwork. Other clients who were receiving more home-based services should be getting it at home.
Will the nursing home do this paperwork for them?
A lot of nursing homes will. Whether or not you want the nursing home to do it is a very different question, which again, I'm going to get to a little bit later on in our discussion.
I apologize.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So pre-COVID, always an annual recertification. And as you mentioned, if you fail to do it, your Medicaid benefits are discontinued. Once COVID started and a public health emergency was declared, there were certain rules put into place that Medicaid, absent very exigent or extenuating circumstances, could not change the Medicaid benefits anyone was receiving. And as a result of that, until the public health emergency ended, I think it was May 11th of 2023, Medicaid couldn't ask or did not perform recertifications.
So they suspended it.
And we know that hundreds of thousands of people in New York were enrolled in Medicaid during the public health emergency as a result of COVID. So there are many people who have no knowledge or haven't even experienced this recertification. So for some, this is going to be a surprise.
So, but they've started asking for recertifications again. And if a client was on Medicaid and now they ask them for recertification, do they have to say what they've been doing for the last 3 years, or do they start from 1 year ago, or how does that work?
Well, it's interesting. We're not quite sure yet.
Okay.
But the process has started, and New York State has gone on a bit of a campaign to remind the population that these recertifications are coming, and they've actually started to encourage clients, make sure your information, like your address, your phone number, your email, is up to date with the New York State Department of Health, because if we send the recertification packet to a wrong address and you don't receive it and you don't reply, your benefits can be discontinued. So that's one thing we're encouraging, not just our clients, but any person who's on Medicaid. Make sure your information is up to date with Medicaid. You can simply do a Google search, to make sure that you're up to date.
That's easy to forget. That's easy to forget to do that.
Right? Life is life. It's hard.
Now, but the nursing home would remind them about it, maybe?
For clients who are in a facility type setting, absolutely. But I think a majority of the people who applied for Medicaid during COVID were home-based services.
So the home care agencies don't get the notice at all?
No. Some of the managed long-term care agencies will. Whether or not they're notifying their constituents, it's in their best interests to do that. But again, it's not a defense if you don't fill it out or if your long-term care agency doesn't contact you, right? So that's issue number one. What are they looking for in the recertification, right? What is it about? Why do they need it? Remember, when you applied for Medicaid, and let's even take a step back, there are two different ways people are applying for Medicaid. And I know one of these is your favorite topics because we've discussed this in the past. There are a set of people or a population of people who apply for something called MAGI Medicaid, Modified Adjusted Gross Income Medicaid. They do that through the New York State Marketplace, normally online. There are questions that you answer online through a computer about your income, and it spits out a result. Those people have to recertify for Medicaid too, although it's more income-based. They do that, like I said, normally online or through a mailing.
So these are people that are not looking for long-term care services per se, are they? Or
some can. There are some people who receive modified adjusted gross income Medicaid where they're getting some long-term community care. But a majority of the clients that we see are over the age of 65, have Medicare, need some sort of home care or nursing home care services, and they or we applied for them through the local Department of Social Services.
Is that MAGI Medicaid? Is that the expanded Obamacare
Medicaid? It's sort of like the Obamacare Medicaid. Okay. Yes, that's a simple way to put it. It's actually very complex, but yes, that's the general idea.
Okay.
But most of our clients were applying for Medicaid through the local Department of Social Services at the county level. And what are they looking for when we're doing the recertification? They are looking to see that you still qualify financially for Medicaid assistance.
Income and assets.
First thing they're looking at is your income, right? Because we all know, depending on the type of Medicaid that you're receiving, normally there's some sort of contribution on the part of the Medicaid recipient. We know that if we're applying for community Medicaid and our income exceeds a certain amount, you either have to pay that excess income to Medicaid and lose it, or you can pay it over to the pooled income trust.
We've had a listen to Lawrence podcast on that once before.
Exactly. And the new thing that's coming up is pre-pandemic, the amount for home care was something like $980. Now, the allowable income amount is $1,697. So there is a whole subset of clients who pre-COVID had an overage because they had $1,300 of Social Security, and now post-COVID, because of the increase in the income allowances, don't even need to participate in a pooled income trust anymore.
Okay, so and we have to let Medicaid know.
And we have to let Medicaid know because Medicaid hasn't changed the budget on their computer system, and they don't know any of these changes. So for some clients, this whole recertification process can be great. It can allow them to keep all of their income if they're under a certain amount and not even have to deal with the pooled income trust any longer.
Got it.
The other items that Medicaid is looking for is they are looking at your assets. And for a lot of clients, once they're approved for Medicaid, their assets don't change significantly. However, there are clients where their assets do change significantly.
So they may get an inheritance or
lawsuit proceeds, okay. Right? That's one. Another big one is if I had a client that was on community Medicaid or nursing home Medicaid and they owned a home and they submitted with the application an intent to return home and now we're selling that house owned by the applicant, they're coming into some money that would put them over the threshold for...
So before the house was exempt, but the money from the sale it would not be exempt. They have to figure out what to do with that and how long it was in their account and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely, 100%. And then the last is, like you spoke of, is inheritance, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a big issue as well. And even a subset of that, which occasionally happens, not all the time, but it does happen enough, where if we have a client who is receiving Medicaid and their spouse is alive and the spouse now predeceases the Medicaid spouse, that Medicaid spouse is entitled to something called an elective share.
Right of election.
You've got it. And
which is about a third.
It is about a third. And obviously, if the amount of the sale proceeds from the house or the lawsuit proceeds or the elective share or the inheritance puts that Medicaid applicant or recipient over the allowance amount, we've got issues. If you stay or apply as is and don't take any action, you're not going to be eligible.
So bottom line, our clients should know that they got money. Or the family knows they got money and we're going to have to deal with that. So we'll report to Medicaid at this, what you call a recertification. Do they get 12 months of statements? Do they have to do that? Like when they first did the application, do we have to give them paperwork on every asset, every month, every brokerage account, every month? How much paperwork do we have to do?
Well, I suspect that if the spouse passed away during COVID, a year ago, and now we're just getting notification of the recertification, I would hope that if it's one of our clients, they're coming back to us because they know this is a problem.
Obviously, we recommend that all of our clients should go back to us and let us do the recertifications.
100%. Yeah. If not, I think that's where a lot of people get themselves into trouble because Medicaid can, for the most part, ask for information or documentation they want, and it's very easy for them to say, whether it's right or wrong, for them to say, well, you didn't give us the documentation we requested, we're denying you. Whether or not that determination by Medicaid is correct is a separate issue, but you have to deal with that in an appeal, which we call a fair hearing. Right. You don't want that.
And they can track that through Social Security. If people are not telling Medicaid about certain assets that came in, can they track that with the Social Security number?
They might be able to.
Now, right?
They might be able to, but Medicaid also has.
So everybody, make sure you tell the truth.
Yes, an asset verification system.
Don't be naughty.
Nope. And they have computer programs now where they can run your assets through a computer and it spits out a result with the questions they want.
Is there anything else you think that our people need to know about? Is that's enough for today?
I think that's enough. The only other thing is if they make a request for something you can't get and you're not utilizing an attorney, ask for additional time to obtain the documentation. Don't ignore the due date.
Very good practical advice. Well, thank you, Michelle Jablonski, my wonderful partner. I think you just learned a lot, probably more than you wanted to know, but you have to know this stuff. Bottom line, recerts are real. Recerts need assistance with these recerts. Come in here, and we'll help you with that. Look, this was today's question. about recertifications, you may have other questions. I want you to send them to me so I can answer them, or Michelle can answer them at info@davidowlaw.com. That's DAVIDOWLAW.com. Or just go on our website and you can. There's a way on there, if you'll figure it out, to send us questions, and we may answer it on another podcast in the future, or we may I may answer it in my Listen to Lawrence letter, a twice-week letter that we answer questions and I give you a cute little answer and you learn something. So people love them. They share it with their friends. So sign up for that if you haven't signed up, and share them with your friends if you are getting them. So I want to thank you for listening today. I wish you peace, health, and happiness. And until next time, stay safe, my friends. Bye-bye.
The Listen to Lawrence podcast is not meant to be advice particular to any one person or to serve as a do-it-yourself planning guide. It's simply to educate the audience. For more information, please visit davidowlaw.com.